Alice, I want to thank you for inviting me, and we're going to switch gears now and talk a little bit about the financing of dental care and how we move in a new direction with that financing to support disease management. So dental carriers, where do they play? What's that space, and how can they interact with academics and others in this room to really drive this? And so it's no surprise that we play an important role in benefit design and financing. That would be obvious. But we also have the ability to integrate data. And we can do that, if available, both on the dental side and the medical side, and really make new combinations to affect health and wellness. And I'll give you some simple examples of that as we move along. And we can also do things with outreach, so we can understand which patients receive care and then send them communications and reach out in new and creative ways to impact their decision to get care early on. We can also work in the care coordination role, and I'll talk to you a little bit about a pilot I'm working on with dual eligibles, which is, for those of you who are familiar with that population, very, very difficult, tremendous barriers to care. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then also, we need to start measuring what we do. So dentists do stuff. They turn teeth to dust. But very rarely do we really understand the outcome. We don't go to that. We do procedures and then assume, we make assumptions that we're doing things correctly. So more and more, we're starting to realize that we have to measure not only cost, but also quality of care. So speaking of quality, really this is the triple aim. And on the clinical side, you're working to this, but this is the new norm in industry. So this is the new value proposition. When people buy things in healthcare, they're expecting a number of things. They're not only expecting cost reduction, they're expecting improved outcomes and an improved member experience. And they're also expecting us to measure it. No longer is talk acceptable in industry or clinically, for that matter. And you've been listening to everything around health reform, and I just got to say that cost is really, really a big issue today, and I don't really have to tell any of you that. Well, there are only certain ways to control costs in healthcare, and some of those are not acceptable, and some of them are. So what can we do? We can cut benefits, and that's not really very palatable. We can shift costs to the consumer, which also certainly is done quite frequently, but isn't really really a great thing in terms of access to care for many individuals who don't have insurance and are living just above the poverty level. Certainly, we want to manage fraud and abuse. That's good for everyone. But what we're trying to do really is shift from this state of doing advanced restorative care to moving toward paying for health and wellness. And everyone so far has really talked a little bit about that. If we can accomplish that, we can really get some improved outcomes. And certainly Canberra is one of those strategies that will affect that change. So speaking of change, what's driving it? You've been listening, I'm sure, in this meeting to all those things that are driving change, and it just gives you a headache just thinking about all of those driving forces. Certainly the Affordable Care Act, accountable care organizations that you're hearing about in the dental space, not yet really affected by them. Electronic health records, bringing all information around the patient. But all in, what we're talking about is integrated, patient-centered healthcare. And we need to start thinking outside of our own little roles to thinking more about the patient and what is really, really best for them and how to impact their care. So what can insurance companies do? Why am I here? So what's really our place in this whole thing? So if we do things correctly, we partner with you, with academics and others, to really implement some of these things. We have to move from our traditional one-size-fits-all archaic benefits, which all of you are familiar with, to really addressing the concerns that we have today around disease management and really paying for the kind of care that we want to see moving forward. So the long term, again, if you look at my last bullet, and I'm trying to move quickly, but the whole idea is we have to provide incentives that really match the kind of care that you want to see delivered. And we have to get all stakeholders to buy into that, and that's not an easy proposition. So a lot of you might think that insurance companies really drive decisions and hold people back. Well, let me tell you, insurance companies will sell anything as long as somebody will buy it. So just kind of keep that in mind, that they're almost a middleman, that they will only sell what people will buy. So I've got to throw this out there, because whether you want to move ahead in healthcare or not, more and more people, lay people and everyone, they're realizing that there are big concerns in oral health care. Obviously, we're all familiar with the death of Diamante Driver, but that's not an isolated incident. So we see this recent article in the Times, and I think it showed in 1 year there were 60-some deaths from oral disease, and many, many more hospitalizations that are occurring needlessly around dental disease. So even those that are not directly involved with dental are starting to see this, that oral health is important to overall health, at least with articles like this. So we live in this chaotic time, and if we really look at this correctly, this is a time when there's also tremendous opportunity, both for all of you and also for industry, to start to really manage chronic disease, which is something that we really haven't done very well, and then measure outcomes. And Ahmed, we've touched on this, but really start to seeing whether these things that we think are appropriate are really paying off in terms of health and wellness, and then pay for those outcomes. So industry is really good at saying, you know, you dentists should do this, and then backing off and not paying for the things that they should be doing. Well, it's time for dental carriers to step up to the plate and pay appropriately for the time spent to move ahead with disease management. So we'll talk just a couple minutes about some of the practical applications that you're all familiar with. Cambra, certainly, implementation, things we can do around early childhood caries, and a little bit about data integration, and then the dual eligible population that I mentioned. So one of the things we're doing, for example, is funding a PBRN network where Cambra is really tested in private practices. Because it's great to see John at the university talking about Cambra, but then when the rubber hits the road and this stuff hits private practice, how much of it really gets implemented? So we want to see how effective that really is, and then also we want to overlay a financial model on the clinical results to really see if we're really improving outcomes and decreasing costs. And we'll have those results probably within a couple of years. Once we have those results, we can start benchmarking them and delivering various educational components to dentists and other private practices. So just mentioning around risk assessment and some of the tools we have now, much of what we do is done around CDT codes. So for you dentists out there, those are procedure-based. So for the first time, we do have three codes around risk assessment that are to be tied with the use of accepted risk tools. And we can start to really attach those to the procedures that are done in dentistry. And this is going to be done in baby steps in industry, because nobody's really done that effectively. So if we start down a disease-managed path, again, we should accomplish all of these objectives. We should improve outcomes and reduce costs, and this should result in a win-win situation for all of us. For dentists, academics, and also insurance carriers. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of the models quickly that cross medical-dental boundaries, because one of the things we like to do is we think we have to work in our own little practices and our own little shells, but we don't. So if we think of the physician as seeing a patient many times before a dentist, we can have physicians, PCPs, deliver such things as fluoride varnish, for example, and do screenings, and then direct patients to a dental home. So do we really care about physicians doing fluoride varnish as opposed to dentists? Well, not really, but the objective is really to move them to a dental home early by age one. So at the same time they're doing that, we can determine whether the physician's been paid and then see whether they've had dental procedures done and send communications to the patients to pull them into dental practices early on. And all of that should affect outcomes, and we can measure the cost and the procedures done both on the medical and the dental side. So this medical-dental data integration, that's sort of interesting. So 5 minutes, okay. We can start looking at those with chronic disease. So we can look at diabetics, we could look at pregnant women and understand whether they've had the care they need, and then deliver messages to them to be sure they get, for example, periodontal treatment, and then assess cost and quality on both sides of the fence. So I've only got a couple minutes left, and I want to talk to you about a project that I'm looking at, and that's working with dual eligibles. Those are those that are eligible for Medicare and Medicaid. This is an especially challenging population because they have usually multiple chronic diseases, a lot of behavioral challenges. They may have drug addiction, poverty, functionally homebound, on and on. So tremendously difficult to work with. And then in the United States, we also know that the costs for managing these populations are disproportionately high. So what I'm doing is developing a care coordination model where we can have a dental care coordinator working with a medical care coordinator using a shared portal, not as elaborate as what Amin is doing in his study, but really trying to match that care coordination with care delivery. So what I'm doing, instead of just dishing out traditional care, I will either, depending on their situation, provide mobile outreach or mobile care, transport the patient, or deliver traditional care if that's necessary. But really understanding who the patients are and matching them with the care that they need. So in a sense, customizing dental care around their specific needs. And then trying to price this so we don't go out of business in the process, which is something else. Just mentioning the Dental Quality Alliance. The Dental Quality Alliance is starting to develop quality measures on the dental side. We've always been able to understand cost perspective quite well, but what we need to move to is a balanced approach where we start to look at both cost and quality metrics. And just touching on analytics, I probably have just 2 minutes left. Most of the time, we never get to analysis. So we throw data at people. They never really understand it, and we say, there, now we did our jobs. So what we're trying to do is look at data in new ways where you really can see things, where you can really determine whether you're getting the outcomes you want. In this case, we're seeing a disease or a treatment continuum across age bands, what kinds of dental treatment are dished out. So we can use this kind of visual to see how that looks as we change the parameters of care, and it can be quite striking. So this new type of dental approach that we're doing is not just looking at overutilization of procedures that you've all heard about, but in a sense looking at the other side, looking at that quality improvement side. So you get a total picture of what's done in a dental practice to assess both outcomes and costs, looking at both the provider and the member. And then lastly, I'll say that we are doing things around quality improvement. So these parameters developed out of the Dental Quality Alliance, we're giving incentives based on various levels of care, and we'll actually pay for performance for quality measures. In this case, I think it's perio maintenance, but we could do it around fluoride or whatever other type of care you wish to dish out. We can raise the bar, so to speak, by doing these special incentives and then measuring the outcomes as we see here. And this is my last slide. So how do we know that what the things we do really work? So this is just a simple approach where we're looking at sealants. And what we're doing is, instead of just saying we did X number of sealants, we're saying, okay, so for those teeth that we sealed, how many restorations are done on top of those? And how do those compare to those individuals who haven't had sealants, and then compare over time in terms of cost and quality? And I see you looking at your watch, so I'm gonna end now, and thank you very much.